This is a recording of Dr. Tom Roszell for Sunday, January 28th, 2018. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Roszell Live by Dr. Tom Roszell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Roszell Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Roszell Live. This is Dr. Tom Roszell Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on whatever you'd like to talk about your health. You've had problems, and I'm sure you've tried all kinds of things, and when you've applied them, they come up with, you know, the same old, nothing that really gave you any resolution. Here's an opportunity. Call me, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Let's talk about your stuff. I have a lot of little things that I want to discuss with you today, particularly since it's raining outside. You know, that weather kind of shifted and it's kind of ugly in the Washington, D.C. area. But, you know, there's always a ray of light. And the more that you know about your health, the more sunshine comes into your light. And we're going to talk about the effect of sunshine on your body. We're going to talk about opioids today. We're going to talk about this thing called the HPA axis. We're going to talk about a little piece of your brain called the SCM. And I'll tell you what that is in a little bit. But hopefully we have enough time to do that and answer your questions. And those are the most important things. 888-630-9625. I want to start out by kind of prompting you for next week's program. Next week, I'll have a very special guest in studio with me, Dr. Qinglong Zhang. And he's from Shanghai. And we have the privilege of having him as part of our staff. Dr. Zhang started with us last August, actually the third week, fourth week of August, and he's been with us since. He's a brilliant, brilliant practitioner, owns 2 degrees. He's a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine, as well as a doctor of chiropractic in the United States, and this man can really bring East and West. And that, by the way, next week's program, that's what we're going to talk about, is the blending of Eastern and Western medicine, or where East meets West. And I think you're going to find it very fascinating. So make sure that you tell all your friends that have that kind of interest to pay attention, because you're going to enjoy the presentation. I promise you, you will. There's so much that's going on in the news right now, and I want to lead with an article that is really important. And everybody's kind of off the charts on this thing. And it's the flu epidemic that's out there. You know, you see every newspaper article, every newscast, every talking head saying how bad the flu is this season. It's the worst since 2009. Well, we have ebbs and flows with the flu, and sometimes they're really bad, and sometimes they're just bad like they usually are. But here's the thing, and what you have to understand about this. The last 3 years in a row, and including this year, this seasonal flu this year, you know, this last fall 2017 to this winter 2018, the flu shot that they've been trying to get you to go and get doesn't work. And if you go read the information that's posted by the CDC, you'll find that that in fact is absolutely true. It doesn't work. They're not giving you the protection. And even on a good year, the protection that you think you're getting is not ample, simply because of the fact that they can't match the virus, the viral pattern. See, the only time that an inoculation works, if they can absolutely match the viral pattern, and then they can stimulate enough antibody reaction in your body. So the thing of it is that when they give you the inoculant, they're going to tell you that you have up to 60% or 60% of people will produce an antibody reaction because of the inoculation, because of the vaccine, supposedly to protect you. What they don't tell you is that only up to 50 maximum in a really, really good year, 60% of those who do trigger an antibody reaction get protection. They get enough antibodies that, so best case scenario, there's 36% of you who get the flu shot that actually get protected on a really, really good year. On a bad year, like the last 3 years in a row, guess what happens? Nothing. You have a bigger risk of getting the flu shot or getting the flu from the flu shot than you do anything else. Remember, it's a live virus. This is not something that is, you know, putting in, you're getting the same bug that's out there, or not, if you got the same bug at a low level, you might get a reaction, but you're getting what they thought was going to be this year's flu shot last spring, because it takes a while to manufacture. The problem is these viral patterns mutate and they become something else. So you're not getting what you need to get. So how do you take care of yourself? You know, you have to, and we talked about this a little bit last week. How do you take care of yourself? One, get sleep. Two, don't go outside, you know, from a really warm environment to a really cold environment uncovered. Get that head covered, get your neck covered, get your hands covered. Most importantly, by the way, are those areas, because that's where you lose the most amount of heat. And by the way, in Chinese medicine, the neck has something called wind points. That's where pathogens can get into the body and disrupt the energetic fields of the body, making you much more susceptible. You need sunlight. So in case you don't get sunlight, like from about September all the way through to about 1st of May, and direct sunlight stimulating your immune system, you need to take vitamin D. Over 80% of us in this area of the world, in this latitude, by the way, how you think about latitude and longitude? Longitude is long, you know, they're long lines from the pole, North Pole to the South Pole, and latitudes kind of run, you know, east and west. Well, at this latitude, we don't get enough sunlight, and over 80% of you are highly deficient in vitamin D, and you want a natural form. You don't want this crazy D2 disiferol that doesn't do much of anything in your body. High levels of vitamin C, you know, you need to take that to stimulate interferon in your body. Interferon is what protects you against viruses. Then things like echinacea. Echinacea is an herb that increases immune response. Zinc, little old zinc. Take about 30 milligrams a day. Not going to hurt you. And that also will boost your immunological system. There's homeopathics out there. Go to a good natural food store, and there's really good things you do. Now, if you get sick, there's things that you need to do, but you're not my patient, so I can't tell you exactly how that procedure works without knowing who you are and how to apply it, but get somebody who understands natural therapeutics. The Theraflu that's out there that they're giving everybody to try to protect you, the Theraflu only works if you catch it within the first 24 to 36 hours. After that, it doesn't work. And actually, there's tremendous side effects. So check it out, figure it out, and, you know, make sure that you protect yourself. Eat well. Get some sleep. Throw the sugar away. One teaspoon of sugar decreases your immunological protection by 12% for 8 hours. It doesn't destroy the white blood cell, but what it does, it puts it to sleep. It makes it comatose. You're out to lunch. Enough said. Just protect yourself, do what you can, drink lots of water, stay away from the alcohol, and you may find that you'll get through this a whole lot better. And if you do get, you know, banged up a little bit with a bug, your duration will be much shorter, and then see somebody like me, because we have all kinds of magical things that we can do to help you. I want to talk about an interesting article, and I kind of have a vested interest in this one. And it's, again, we're into the vitamin D thing, and it's about redheads. So why am I interested in redheaded people? Simply because of the fact that you look at me and there's no red up on there. It's pretty white, and there's a lot of missing on the top of it as well. No, but here's the deal. I have two redheaded grandsons, and all of us in the family seem to carry that gene for red hair, and a son-in-law who's red hair. And so what the deal is that, you know, because of that, we become much more susceptible to red. So how did a good old Sicilian boy end up with carrying a gene that perpetuated to his family to produce the redhead? Well, if you know anything about, you know, the powers of antiquity, if you wanted to control the Mediterranean, you had to control Sicily, including the Vikings. And they came down and they raped, pillaged, and plundered and passed on, you know, the green blue eyes and the red hair and the fair skin and things of that nature. So let's get away from history and talk about red hair. It's about 2% of the global population that has red hair. It's very, very rare. And it's caused by a mutation of a certain gene receptor within the body. And if you want the technical piece of that, it's called MC1R. And it's located on a very specific chromosome, okay, called chromosome number 16. Okay, that's all the technical data I'm going to give you. So, you know, you really don't need to know. And, you know, if you need to know, you can go look it up. You know, so because fair-headed redheads have lighter skin and complexion, they, you know, they're able to produce vitamin D more effectively than most people. So redheads can be at a much greater risk for skin cancer and other problems than some of us who have darker hair and darker complexions and the like, right? They also are more likely to be sensitive to any kind of shift in temperatures, hot and cold and things of that nature. So, you know, if you're a redhead and you're living up here and you go down south and you get in the sun, you may end up with, you know, temperature shifts that can cause you heat stroke, and that's not okay. And also pain and painkillers, and that's going to be a segue into getting into another topic today. But regardless of whether you have this silly gene that we talked about a minute ago, this, and by the way, I'll give you some more. I can't help myself. It's called melanocortin 1 receptor. Or MC1R, and as we said, this is, you know, your body needs certain amounts of vitamin D for optimal health, and you got to make sure that you know what your levels are. So here's the deal with blood work. So long as we're on the subject, the normal laboratory tests are when you get it is 32 or 30 in some labs, up to some of them say 88, some go to 100. The truth of it is anything that is under 50. Is considered insufficient. Once you hit that 32 mark or less, it's highly deficient. So you ask, where should it be? Well, I'll tell you. It should be at about 80 to 85 in there. If you want optimal protection from cancers, you want optimal protection, you know, for your brain, your immune system, and so forth. So most of us aren't getting anywhere near enough, and some of you are ready to break. I mean, fracture, real deal, fall down, break a bone because you don't have enough, and that's just the beginning part of it. So on the positive side, you know, with redheads, getting back to all these folks, sensitivity to ultraviolet light helps, you know, produce D in these people much more efficiently than, by the way, those of you who are blondes. You don't do a very good job of producing vitamin D. Redheads do, you don't. And so we have to make sure that we know what's going on. You know, you go back and you look studies. Studies are great outside this country. We, like, do nothing here. So there's a guy by the name of Jonathan Rees, and he's the chair of dermatology in Scotland at University of Edinburgh. I get to go there in June, by the way. It's going to be fun. I'm going to get to attend an international conference there. I've never been to Edinburgh. It's my wife's ancestry branch goes to Scotland. So anyway, we're going to go up to Scotland, and, you know, we're going to probably check some of these things out. But anyway, he found that, you know, if you're in Northern Europe, you get used to seeing people with different color hair. But it's rare, much more rare there to see redheads. And isn't that interesting? And in most Africa, it's exceedingly rare to see somebody with red hair. So you got two ends of the world. It's like, wow, what's going on here? Why do we still have a problem? So redheads may need less vitamin D. So when I see a patient, I've got to be very careful about how much vitamin D I give them based on their genetic background and exposure and so forth. So, you know, it's not just across the board. And I'm bringing this up simply because you don't want to run and say, oh, I need it, and I'm going to take, you know, 10,000 units or 50,000 units once a day, because, in fact, you could be increasing the problem more so. And by the way, these redheads as well, and this is going to segue in another piece that we're going to talk about, need less painkillers. They react extremely sensitively to any kind of painkillers, and subsequently they become much more susceptible to addiction, and particularly to opioids. And we're going to talk about opioids in the second half of the program. So I got all kinds of little things for you. We have people calling in, 888-630-9625. I will take your phone calls. We're coming up to a break, and, you know, Dr. Tom's got a motor mouth today. We've got all kinds of things that we want to share with you, and just not enough time to make it all happen. So pay attention, and don't go away. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back after some important messages. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, I'm in studio. It's cold outside. Well, it's not really cold outside, but it's wet and damp, and it feels like, you know, it's getting to the bones. So stay warm. Stay bundled up. and don't get that chill back and forth simply because, you know, you think that you want to go outside without a hat, without a jacket. It's going to get you. It's going to bite you. Remember what we talked about? Immune system drops, and this time of the year, there's no sunlight, and you've been eating way too many sugars over the holidays. You still haven't gotten over it, by the way. Some of you are trying to finish it up, and you're like my patients who tell me, well, you know, I just can't throw it out. I have to finish it. And I say, give it to somebody you don't like. You know, take it down and find your worst friend in the world and give it to them and let them suffer the slings and consequences of getting sick, not you. It's not okay. 888-630-9625. Let's go to the phones. Diane, how can I help you? Thank you for calling.
Yes, last week you had someone on the phone that described my condition exactly. A nerve condition where it goes over to your side and then it goes down your leg and it gives extreme pain.
Okay, that's depends on which part of the leg is going down. If it goes down the back, it's called a sciatica. If it's going down the front, it's called a femoral neuralgia. So go ahead, ask the question.
I know it just goes down my leg. The leg hurts when I stand on it.
Okay, so there's a couple things that does it hurt? When you go from a sitting to a standing position, Diane, is it uncomfortable for you to do that?
Yes, it's, you could say it's kind of painful at times.
Okay, so then when you walk after that, if you start walking a little bit, does it start getting less irritating? It's still there, but it gets less irritating?
Yes, sometimes it hurts especially when I start standing on it.
Okay, so what you're describing could be a combination of things, but the most likely scenario is something called a sciatica that is due to a sacroiliac, we call it a subluxation, the joint's out of position, and it's causing swelling and a tug on one of the branches of the sciatic complex. The sciatic nerve is really five nerves. It's not just one. And so it depends on which nerve is being irritated, tells you where the symptom is, and then it also isolates the level that it's coming from. So that can come about from a lot of different things, and structural balance is critical in fixing that. And you have to look from the feet all the way up and from the head all the way down to be able to balance the body. But once you take the pressure off of that, then the body can begin to heal over a period of time. When it's chronic, when it's there a long time, this joint space begins to continue to be full of fluid and soreness. That's why when you sit on it or you're standing up, that pressure in there, you know, causes the nerve to get tweaked. When you start moving around a little bit, it pumps the fluid out of the sacroiliac joint, so it feels a little better. It doesn't take it away, but it feels a little bit better. But if you walk too far, you stay up on it too long, the pain will continue to climb and it gets worse, and then you got to get off of it. So first you have to identify where the triggers are. And in my business, what we look at are the triggering mechanisms of potential injury. They can be a little bit or they can be a lot. You know, something very small like bad posture patterns, weight that's not where it's supposed to be. You can look at something dramatic. You lifted something in the wrong position. You were set up for it. Those things can cause it. Or simply that your body's muscle patterns have gone into a state of what we call inhibition or weakness, and they're not holding the joint spaces the way they are. But those are things that can be fixed and they can be dealt with very, very rapidly. Dr. Harlan Browning was on the program with me last week, and you were hearing him. And Dr. Browning is amazing when it comes to these types of things. You know, we see a lot of people from professional athletes to, you know, all of us, you and me, and we all suffer the slings and arrows of some of these things. But that's where it comes from. It's a sciatic problem. Sounds like it's coming from the sacroiliac. It could come from the disc spaces or off-centering of the vertebrae. And even farther up, it can come from the upper portion of the neck and lower portion of the skull, because that controls all the neurological input all the way down. And if, you know, if you visualize your spinal cord like a big coaxial cable with all these little fibers coming out of it, anything throughout the system, if there's a misalignment someplace, can cause a tweaking or a stretch or an irritation or a tugging on the nerve. And then wherever that nerve goes, you're going to have a problem. So I hope that helps you a little bit, but that's something that can be fixed. When it's sore, put ice on it. If it's swollen, it'll take some of the swelling down. If it's, you know, it's kind of flaring up and it's bad. Heat, actually, if you put heat over the sacroiliac joint, will make it worse because you're going to increase the swelling. When in doubt, and here's the guideline. When in doubt to use heat or ice, always use moist heat. Moist heat. Not a heating pad, but moist heat. Oh, excuse me, I switched that around. I'm still talking about muscles. Use ice, I'm sorry. If it's a joint space, always use ice. Ice on the joint. Moist heat on muscles, but if you're in doubt of which way to go, one way or the other, always use ice. We're coming up to a break, and we have all kinds of questions. Give me a call, 888-630-9625. We'll get right back to you. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, I'm in studio. It's wet outside. I want to be inside. You know, and you want to stay warm today because don't let that weather fool you, even though that it's not in a bad place. That water, that wet, can get into you and make it feel like it's a whole lot colder and it goes deep to the bones. So protect yourself. You don't want to get sick. And the sun's not out and you want sunlight because that stimulates immunological response. I was listening to a really interesting article on tape. I subscribe to a lot of the functional medical sites, and I'm always picking things up, but things that we have talked about for years about sunlight and the stimulation immunological reactions, suddenly they're drawing back from, you know, old ancients, you know, from the Egyptians, from, you know, the Germans, you know, Kellogg and Priester and so forth. These guys had healing sanatoriums, but one of the things that they did was that they made sure that people went out in the sunlight because sun is necessary for healing. Well, an interesting piece that we've known about forever is that, and how they found this out years ago and brought it into the States, and then all of a sudden somebody forgot about it and they don't do it anymore, is that they had a vial of blood from a child who had high bilirubin level. You know, when a child is born, sometimes they have this, you know, yellow look all over them, and everybody freaks out that they got to get rid of the bilirubin level, and generally, naturally, it goes away within 1 to 2 days, but if it persists and persists at a high level, this bilirubin can cause permanent brain damage. So, you know, they were doing everything they could to make a difference. So how they found out what really happens is they had a vial of blood that they had, somebody left out near a window, and it was high levels of bilirubin, but when they went to process it, after a day or two, they found that the bilirubin levels had been degraded, they had been broken down. And that's where they began to understand that sunlight was so critical, and they started using these, you know, I call them, you know, warming lights for kids when they're in the hospital, but they're infrared lights, and to break up the bilirubin. So that's where it all came from, but it works across the board. Some people go out in the sunlight and they feel great. Their emotional states get uplifted and so forth. That's not by accident. Your brain is permeable to sunlight. That's one of the reasons that we use low energy light lasers in the practice and so forth. And we see healing that we didn't see years ago. 888-630-9625. We lost one of our callers, and he was asking something about statins, but let's go to Al. Al, thank you for waiting. How can I help you, sir? Al, are you there?
Yes, sir.
How can I help you? You have a question on Parkinson's.
I was wondering about Parkinson's disease and what the current methods for treatment and breakthroughs have been.
Okay, let me give you some guidance on Parkinson's and what we know that is taking place. So, with Parkinson's, we're talking about a neurodegenerative process that at one point they thought was very progressive, and that, you know, there was really no fix to it. There's some interesting studies out there now that are talking about movement with Parkinson's and stimulating brain pathways and having the patient visualize normal gait and response patterns. And we're seeing those things begin to cause major shifts. Also, you take a look at the omega fatty acid levels you fix those omega-3s, 6, and 9s in the right balance. The amyloid that begins to build up is then able to break down. See, there's these things in the brain, Al, there's called glial cells. They make up about 85% of the brain. And the glial cell is also what helps break down any toxic levels in the body. They break them down, they dump them in the spinal fluid, and they get rid of it. Sometimes if the spinal fluid motion isn't working the way it's supposed to, they can't get rid of it. Sometimes if the energetic platforms aren't there, they build up even much more severely. So in a quick response, and by the way, Parkinson's is a program that we should have and just talk about that only, but with acupuncture, low energy light lasers, cranial manipulation, dietary patterns, that's from the conservative branch. They've also seen some interesting anecdotal responses with stem cell. And a lot of this has come out of research now that's even being done in this country, in that there's a repair process with people who have actually gone to the place where there's degenerative changes. So stem cell therapy is critical for a lot of stuff. But we're seeing joint space repairs with laser and combination with acupuncture and things of that nature. There's so much that can be done, at least to help. And, you know, if we can be more useful to you, please give us a call at 703-698-7117. Appreciate your phone call, Al. Thank you. I know that was just skimming the surface, but I want you to know that a lot can happen. We have so much to cover and so little time to get it done, but I want to get into, and we have several phone calls I'm going to get to, so don't go away. I want to talk to you a little bit about this thing, and we're going to lead into the topic and only briefly today on opioid. We all know there's an opioid epidemic out there. And it started in 2003, 2004, when the medical establishment, traditional allopathic medicine, and the FDA said that this is the best way to help treat all kinds of things, from chronic pain to fibromyalgia to acute pain patterns and so forth. So they started hooking people up on, you know, opioids. One a more famous person that we all know is Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, Rush was hooked on Oxycontin, which is an opioid. And he had to go through all kinds of things to get off of it and finally was able to do it, you know, thank God. But these things can be, you know, awful. So there's a firestorm out there about opioid abuse and, you know, the blatant dissemination of the drug across the marketplace. And, you know, it's just writer's cramp, as I lovingly call it. You go into a physician and say, here, take this. You know, here's the underlying motive for some people is that the opioid crisis, and we'll call it crisis, results in an excess of $10 billion a year in sales. And that's legitimate drug sales, not to say anything about the street value of this stuff that's going on and how people are losing their capacity as human beings. You know, given the financial incentives, you know, to produce, sell, and distribute these drugs across the board, you know, it's no wonder that Big Pharma, you know, has a material vested interest in promoting this stupidity across the board. And yes, I said stupidity because, and I really mean it, opioids, you know, the opioid epidemic has been, you know, it's overprescribing of these pain medications that have the same receptor sites in the brain as many other things, but heroin and the like. And, you know, there's a lot of movement in different areas to get it done. So, here's the nitty gritty on it, because we don't have a tremendous amount of time to cover all the little pieces, you know, the opioid lobby, if you will. Okay, we're talking about lobbyists. And by the way, between direct influences and kind of behind the back door, the advocacy groups, you know, they employ about 1,350 lobbyists. And this goes all the way back from 2006 all the way to 2015. And they know that the opioids are addictive. They know that. There's no getting around it. These aren't stupid people. They get it. So then there's this guy by the name of Andrew Clonidney. He's a medical physician. He's founder of a group called the Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing. Any opioid use other than just for somebody who is dying in agony is, to me, irresponsible. But that's me saying that to you. So anyway, he said that opioid lobby has been doing everything it can to preserve the status quo of aggressive prescribing. They are reaping huge profits from aggressive prescribing, end quote. Now, that comes directly from him. Give me a break, right? What's the deal here? This is like craziness. If they know that, and I know, and people who do the work that I know, I do, there's other ways of controlling pain and reversing the situation completely. So why in God's name would they continue pursuing something that is so blatantly egregious and devastating to human beings, other than it puts somebody's bankroll at a much higher level? You know, this is not a way that the pharmaceutical industry, you know, has a tendency to kind of evade responsibility in things like this specifically, but in other areas too. Because what? They get new patients and they continue to pump pills into the system. And, you know, there's another, you know, people are finally coming around. There's a woman by the name of Dr. Anna Lembecki, and she's the chief of addiction medicine at Stanford University School of Medicine. They get it. They understand it. But they're having to fight money and power and position that far supersedes their ability to call attention. And some of them get shoved off into the corner or lose positions or get shut down. It's not okay. You know, there's 33,000 or 63% of the more than 52,000 deaths reported in 2006 are linked to the illicit use of painkillers. That's crazy. That's 33,000 people, 63%. Look, there's other ways. And, you know, people who do the work in natural arena using the things that we use and blunting the body's response and handling the neurological pathways that are responsible for pain, there's so much more that can be done to get your life back. But you're being duped. There's huge evidence and support for non-pharmacological care at this point, particularly for joint-based problems and pain. And one of our callers talking about leg pain, sciatica. You don't need medications to fix that. They can be fixed. They can be resolved. They can be turned around 100%. So knowing that, why would you go to somebody, the only thing that they can do for you is write a prescription, and they say, let's try this. Let's try it. Try what? Let's watch it. Watch what? You know, give me a break. Do something proactively that enhances your body's capacity to resolve problems. You have so much information that's out there. You know, if you don't take care and take control of your own health, nobody is going to do it for you. Nobody is going to do it for you. There's so much more that can be done. 888-630-9625. That's how you talk to me here. If you'd like to talk to one of the doctors at the Rozelle Center for Healing, all you got to do is 703-698-7117. I also want to invite you, go to our website. Go to RozelleCare.com and go through. There's an amazing online program by Dr. Stephanie Pina, and I think you'll enjoy it. It's free. Go do it. It's an hour program. You can sit there at your leisure and go through it. She's an amazing presenter. Those of you who know Dr. Stephanie know that she's really top shelf, but we posted it for you. There's always a program there. And after that's been out there for a couple months, then we're going to put another one up for you. But go to RozelleCare.com. And by the way, I want to remind you that we have a special coming up, and it's called Have a Heart. And what that's all about is that we reduce our fees dramatically, but all the money goes to food for others, and we try to help those who are in need this time of the year. So go to RozelleCare.com, check it out, and we'll go from there. Jim, thank you for calling. How can I help you, sir?
Good afternoon, Doc.
How's it going, buddy?
Not too good.
Well, tell me how I can
help you. About a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, I noticed a bullseye rash on my right arm. I thought it was a spider bite. And then everything started going downhill from there. I just
the little Borrelia spike
lost all my energy and my appetite. And I told my supervisors at work, because I operate heavy machinery, you know, I don't feel good, man. I can't be doing this. So I'll take a vacation day. Take a vacation day. I used all my vacation days sick. I don't know. So then I started passing out. I started having seizures, and they weren't long. And
Jim, how long did it take you? How long did it take you before you were diagnosed with Lyme?
I wasn't diagnosed with Lyme. They did blood work 10 ways from Sunday, and it was inconclusive.
Well, here's the problem, and let me walk you through it because we only have a limited amount of time, and I want to help you. Lyme, the way they diagnose it generally across the board with traditional laboratory tests, is called a Western blot. And the Western blot has limited numbers of tests that they look for the spirochete, the Borrelia. Now, with Borrelia, which is the primary spirochete for Lyme, there are many other cousins that go along with it. And there's actually four major groups, but then there are co-infections that go along with it. The fact that you got a bullseye bite, by definition, diagnostically, you got bit with something that had the Lyme spirochete embedded into it. And by the way, you can get it from a tick, you can get it from a spider, you can get it from passing fluids in a human if somebody else has got it. Yep, that's right. It's humanly transferable as well. So if you get a hold of the physician who has their wits together and you use the traditional approach of doxycycline, and you do it within the first 48 to 72 hours, and even if you stretch it a day, you probably can knock it out. But then after that, you got to go someplace else because it doesn't work well after that, and they have put people on ports and so forth. So the bottom line is that you can beat this thing. Unfortunately, we see way too many Lyme patients that come in, and they're treated with laser, and there are certain herbs that will break down the covering, the biofilm that protects that bug and allows it to continue to reoccur. But things can be done for you. Jim, what I want you to do is send me a note at rosellcare.com and send it directly to me, and I'm going to give you some information. But you can beat this thing. You can get your life back. You can get your health back. It's just unfortunately the medical arena doesn't give you that opportunity. We're coming up to a break. So many things I'd like to tell you and so much more time. But don't go away. I have more.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. I have been in studio just for you because it's wet outside, but I still make it here because you'd need to know and have the most up-to-date information possible. Want to appreciate you listening. 12 noon on the Eastern Seaboard, and those of you on the West Coast, you do the math. And again, we want to applaud, reach out, and thank our armed forces, those guys who somehow are finding us and sending us notes, and we try to get back to you. Thank you for your service, my friends. I want to clear something up. Jeff and I were sitting here talking at the break, and there was an article from the Rhode Island Department of Health, and it's regarding the differences between Theraflu and Tamiflu. And I talked about Theraflu early on. And depends on the dosages. Theraflu is it's a non-prescription drug. But nevertheless, Tamiflu in all situations has to be prescribed. The over-the-counter medication helps reduce fever and body aches and stiffness and so forth. But it, according to the Department of Health in Rhode Island, does what I said, nothing. It, you know, it basically is high doses of acetaminophen, and it's unsafe for children. That's one of the reasons I brought it up, but very high dosages, and it can cause liver failure. So when you start pumping this stuff in, even though that it's a non-prescription medication, you really need to know. And by the way, Tamiflu can increase tremendous tightrope problems with the flu, because here's what happens. The complications are much higher, including brain problems and increase in severity of the flu because it triggers that response. Tamiflu and Theraflu may help a little bit, but don't do it. Do the things that I told you to do naturally. So if you want to see this article, go to www.health.ri.gov and check it out. It's been put out by the Department of Health. Again, www.health.ri.gov, and check out what I was saying to you. I think you're going to be surprised, but you know, as they say, don't do it. Be afraid. These are things that you don't want in your body. There are better ways of making it happen. And particularly when it comes to inoculations and vaccines, particularly the flu vaccine, it doesn't work. It really does not work. And, you know, I challenge anybody to show me where you have a 75% or better effectiveness rate on the flu vaccine. It's just not there. And to be, you know, true, they could help you a whole lot more. If we really wanted to help everybody, you start teaching natural hygiene. how to eat, get rid of the crap that's in your body, exercise properly, take the nutrients that you need to have, get some sunlight, work your brain, folks. You know, get it to a place of calmness and also stimulate it, challenge it, make a difference in how the body works. You have control. You know, 5 years ago, I think it's been now, came out with my book, and it's simply titled Ageless Health. Health is a Do-It-Yourself Program. I wrote it for you. And if you don't have a copy of it, shame on you. Go get one. Do it today. You can go to agelesshealthbook.com and pick it up, or go to our website at rosellcare.com and order it. And you're going to find the guidelines that you need to keep yourself healthy. And if you think it's going to be, and there's some of this, by the way, take this for that, but the point of it is you need to know how your body works. You need to know that you are the captain of your ship, and you can change virtually anything. My belief system is simply this: as long as you're breathing, as long as you're breathing, you can fix something. There's always a way to fix something. Follow us on Facebook. You can click in and do that. We try to publish as much as we possibly can. As long as you're breathing, and you have the will to change, you can turn your body around. That's what your God-given capacity is and always has been. We're coming up to that awful time of the program when I have to say goodbye to all of you till next week. And don't forget, next week, Dr. Qinglong Zhang will be my guest in studio. I think you're going to find the conversation extremely fascinating, where East meets West when it comes to medicine. Don't go away. I love you all. See you next week. Bye.